Hello and welcome to the opening bell, welcome to 2017 and welcome to the first big fight weekend of the year. My name is Matt Christie, Boxing News Editor. Alongside me, my esteemed colleague John Dennan.
Esteemed?
Very much so.
I don't think you've ever said that before.
So, first of all, how was Crimbo? You were posting pictures on social media of you at home alone with horrific looking ready meals, I must say.
What is the spirit of Christmas if it's not a microwave meal for one while watching Netflix?
You told me the other day how you you went about eating the chicken. Tell everyone else that.
Yeah, I just pronged it with the single fork I was using and ate the lump of chicken off the fork. Is that not?
That's the sign of a quality bit of meat. Okay, right. So,
how was your Christmas?
It was generally good. It was kind of family orientated. Not that boozy this year, actually. I kind of went a little bit berserk on the last day of term, as it were, on the last day at Boxing News on the 23rd, and woke up with a terrible hangover for Christmas Eve. So taught myself a lesson there. But by the time, I mean, none of us have the Christmas period off. We're always doing stuff. We've got an issue that's coming out. There's a website that's going all the time. We're always doing stuff. But it was nice to kind of get out of that weird Christmas atmosphere and back into the office, I must admit,
so
at the start of January.
Back
on it. Back on it hard. Okay, so coming up this weekend is a welcome fight. It's a big fight. James De Gale, IBF super middleweight champion, against his WBC counterpart Badou Jack. It's not a classic, but it's one that boxing needs. Boxing needs fights like this, doesn't it, John?
Yeah, we need fights like this to decide who the best in the weight class is. Whoever wins this fight is going to be the best super middleweight in the world. And it doesn't happen often enough in any of the weight classes. It's a big fight. Badou Jack isn't the most exciting individual. He's not the most exciting fighter, but he is very effective. It could actually be a really good fight.
If this had been made a little while ago, before Badou Jack's kind of... He has had quite a rise through the ranks, hasn't he? You'd have picked De Gale all day long. It's not quite such a easy one to call this time, is it? What is it about Badou Jack that makes... What is it that makes him effective, first of all, Badou Jack?
I think it's just he's so consistent. The whole, you know, in these world title fights, he's always been there. He's been in there plugging away through the whole round, through all 12 rounds. So he's harder to outbox than he looks. He's tougher than he should be for someone who's been, you know, knocked out earlier in his career. And he seems to be sort of physically strong if he doesn't have that sort of one-punch explosiveness that, like, George Groves does. I guess he's sort of a constant surprise without being too surprising in the way he goes about things. He's not, I wouldn't say outstanding in any one department in a way you could say De Gale's got great speed or great flair, but he's got no... You know, he's not weak when technically, or, you know, and he's got endurance and all those kind of areas. He doesn't fall short. So I guess it's his sort of consistency. But going up against De Gale, I think De Gale is the more... He's got the more flair and the more skill and the more style, but he's also more erratic. Like, we know De Gale switches off at times in fights.
You mentioned that Badou Jack lost. I mean, when Badou Jack lost, was it Derek Edwards he lost to?
I believe so.
And at that point, Jack, okay, he wasn't like a red-hot prospect, but he was someone on the rise. We thought that he would get into the top 10, and then he lost that, and he was pretty much written off everywhere. But there's a lesson there, isn't there? And sometimes these people can be caught early on. People can get knocked out in the first round, and it doesn't a bad fighter make. We've seen him against George Groves. He stood up to some hefty punishment there. Groves is a very good puncher, one of the best in the division. The one thing, though, with Badou Jack, which hasn't really been mentioned, apart from when it all blew up on social media last year, was the split with his long-term trainer, Eddie Mustafa Mohammed. Now, they were kind of going back and forth between them on social media. He's now with Ludoval, the former light heavyweight titleist, decent fighter in his day. Do we expect... I mean, we've seen in the past when a new trainer comes in after taking the place of an established one, doesn't always go that smoothly. Could this be a factor, do you think?
Yeah, yeah. Potentially, and having your first fight with a new trainer when it's kind of the big, almost, yeah, yeah, when it's the biggest fight of your career is a risk. So we don't know how it's going to play out. But again, I would say that's a factor into Gael's favour going into this, because Gael's been with Jim McDonald for his whole professional career. They've been through a lot of ups and downs, but they've developed a great sort of trust between them, and they're a very successful team.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to stress that I'm not knocking Lou Delval's credentials as a trainer at all, but going back to that George Groves fight, I remember the contrast in the trainer, in the corners during that fight, and it seemed to me to be a crucial part of it, in the fact that Groves' corner was perhaps suggesting that he was comfortably ahead, or that all he had to do was stay up for the last 3 minutes and the fight was his, whereas Eddie Mustafa Mohammed in Badou Jack's corner seemed to be reading the fight absolutely perfectly. So they do have they. I mean, it's often too easy to blame the trainer. But they play a huge, huge part in things, don't they? And you've mentioned there Jim McDonald. There was a period a little while ago where there was some talk that De Gael and McDonald might part, or somebody might be brought in to help out Jim McDonald. But Jim McDonald has worked wonders with James De Gael, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he had a tremendous prospect to work with when De Gael turned professional. He was an Olympic gold medalist, but also, really looked at the business in those Olympics. It's one thing being a good amateur back then in 2008, another thing being a good pro, and McDonald's done a great job with it.
Okay, we move on from one thing that hasn't been discussed that much, which is the state of Badou Jack's corner. Let's move on to something that is being discussed, perhaps overly analysed, and that is James De Gael's his endurance, his durability, in that he can seem to switch off during fights. We've seen it more than once. We saw it against Durrell when he won the title. We saw it before that. I feel like we've seen it in most of his recent outings. Before every single contest, it seems that it became apparent he's been asked about it. He says it's fine, it's sorted. The questions have been more common this time. Everyone is asking him about it. Again, he's telling us it's sorted. Are we to believe him that it's sorted, or is this something that is a real, real problem for James De Gael and could see him lose this fight?
Well, I guess we've got to believe that he's aware of the issue. And for this fight, he does have a specialist strength and conditioning coach, and he does look in tremendous shape. He looked better than he has ever before. But the problem is, habits are hard to iron out when they become sort of ingrained in you. He's done it so many times. You almost have to think it's sort of part of his game, like it or lump it. So I think that is one of the reasons why you've got to see this as being a close fight, especially with it being in America on Badou Jack's promoter's show. So I think it's going to be close. But I think the Durrell fight, De Gael should be good enough to get through it.
If James De Gael does do as you predict, and incidentally I feel the same, I feel that De Gael will win it. I don't think there'll be any doubt about it. I think he may have to go 12 rounds. I think it'll be a hard fight, but I don't think there'll be any doubt about the fact that he deserves a decision at the end of it. If that does happen, where does James De Gael first of all belong in world boxing? Are we talking about James De Gael as one of the pound for pound best, Let's talk about that first, and then we'll move on to where he then figures amongst his countrymen.
I wouldn't say puts him in the pound for pound top ten or anything, but the people he's beaten, Durrell is really good, but the people he's beaten haven't been solid champions, but not sort of stellar. So I think he's skilled enough to get there, but he needs the opponents that are going to make people sit up and take notice. You know, he needs like Golovkin to come up super middleweight or to fight someone like Andre Ward. So he'd be the number one super middleweight, but he'd have more to do to be seen as, you know, in the top 10 pound for pound, I think.
He's got the ability to be, you'd think in the future, to be in the pound for pound, wouldn't you? You'd think that. I mean, but there's something curious about James Agale in that he still hasn't quite, despite being an Olympic gold medalist, despite being a world champion, he still hasn't quite captured the nation's affections. And part of that might be to do with the fact that he has been plying his trade on foreign soil for the last couple of years, where he's won the world title, and I think probably not really been given the credit he deserves for doing that. I think as a consequence of him fighting 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning as opposed to kind of winning his title at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night where everybody can watch may have been a factor in that. It may also be a kind of a hangover from when we really did get to know James Agale, or we got to know the James Agale of 2011 or whenever it was when he fought George Groves, and he seemed to get on a few people's nerves back then with his kind of cockiness and what have you. But is there? Do we believe that James Agale? I mean, he's the wrong side of 30, but the likes of Joe Calzaghe, Carl Froch, Lennox Lewis, all really, they're all guys that kind of proved themselves late on in their careers when they really got the test late on in their careers. Is DeGale's style refined? Is it good enough to kind of to flourish in his mid-30s and to have those kind and to win the defining fights? Or do we think that this win over Jack is potentially his defining moment?
I think he'll be in bigger and better fights, and I don't think he'll lose too much as he gets older. I think, you know, because he's not, you know, he's got fast hands, but he's not just reliant on his speed and sort of timing, all that kind of stuff will improve with experience. I think it won't take too long for people to take to him. Probably all it'll take would be a big fight, a big show.
Yeah, I agree.
In the UK.
You know, yeah, I agree.
Someone like Callum Smith or George Groves. Like, there are plenty, you know, or, you know, he's annoyed with the Eubank camp at the moment, but if he fought Chris Eubank Jr., that would be massive. And you know, DeGale sort of became the villain ahead of the George Groves fight, but he is kind of too likable to stay as a villain. I don't think it will take much for his profile to sort of shoot upwards.
Yeah, and I think what you mentioned there, I mean, we started off by, you mentioned the names of like Golovkin potentially moving up and what have you, but there really is the talent pool in the UK for him to become that household name. He's almost a household name because he's been around for so long, but you would think that fights against the likes of, you mentioned there, Callum Smith, George Groves, Chris Eubank Jr., if he was to win all those three fights, he'd be absolutely massive. And we mentioned Carl Froch's career, and you look back on Carl Froch's career, and Carl Froch didn't really hit the heights until he hit George Groves and knocked him out. And he even now seems to get more credit for knocking out George Groves, who hasn't won a world title, than he did for all his exploits in the Super Six, fighting on the road, beating the likes of Mikel Kessler in a rematch, being the first man to beat Lucien Boutte. You say Carl Froch, and the first thing you think of is what he did to George Groves. So you think that James DeGale has got it in him to be a bit of a domestic hero, hasn't he?
Yeah.
if the fights are made for him. At the same time, it would be so, so intriguing to see him against somebody like Golovkin.
Yeah. And with Froch had the track record of everything he'd done overseas.
Yeah.
But it was really when he was boxing in Britain and took out Boutet.
Yeah.
Then fought for Kester at the O2, he got really, really big. And sort of similarly, even though they're different styles, like De Gea has, he's getting a track record now.
Yeah.
But you could get Golovkin over here. If Golovkin comes over here to fight Cal Brook, he'd get him back for James De Gea.
We've mentioned the name Callum Smith a couple of times. How much of a danger man is Callum Smith? Because we're told that whoever wins this fight would have to give up their title if they didn't want to fight Callum Smith. It's been ordered. I think it's been agreed with the IBF as well that the WBC mandatory will take prominence. So basically, looking at it in black and white, whoever wins this fight, they have to fight Callum Smith next. That's a heck of a defence, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to view Callum Smith as... Yeah, he's a real threat. Probably the most dangerous guy in the division. He doesn't have a world title. I think he's better than Badou Jack. I don't know. I'm not sure who I'd pick if he fought James De Gea. I'd probably see him as the underdog against James De Gea. But, he's tough as well, Smith. And he's got power. And he's technically good. And he did, he's got an opponent or two in common with De Gea, and I think he knocked out the guy he won the European title against, knocked him out in a round. I think De Gea had gone 12.
Yeah, yeah.
So those points of comparison. So that's a great fight. 50-50, I prefer to sit on the fence with that one rather than have to pick a winner.
Okay, well, I won't push you off at this point until it's made. But so I mean, there's a lot to look forward to this weekend with this fight and beyond. Should, particularly for British fans of James De Gea, if De Gea is the victor. Just one more thing on the fight. We mentioned it's Floyd Mayweather's fight. Floyd Mayweather's a promoter. It's over in New York. We don't like to predict bad scores, controversy, but as kind of hardened boxing fans, it's always at the back of our mind, isn't it, when there's a situation with where there's an away fighter. How, in a close fight, should we be concerned that James De Gea may not get the rub of the green on the judges' scorecards?
The Durrell fight was a close one, and he got that.
Agree.
So, I wouldn't worry too much about this one.
You're not losing any sleep over it, are you?
It takes a lot to make me lose sleep, man.
True. Okay, right, let's move on. We mentioned... let's just talk about... We spoke, I think, about the Chris Eubank kind of pay-per-view briefly before Christmas. This is before it kind of all descended into even more chaos than was already surrounding it at the time of it being announced. We were just not getting any information. I think it was probably about this time last week that rumours started that the blockbuster between Chris Eubank Jr. and Ronald Quinlan box office event of the century thus far was in jeopardy. And quite frankly, you could see where those rumours had come from, because when a pay-per-view event is announced, or any boxing event is announced, you, number one, know where it's going to be held. If as a broadcaster, you kind of know that situation. It's all been tied in with this. We didn't know where the venue was. We had no idea what was on the undercard. We'd been told it was pay-per-view, but we didn't know how much it was going to cost. And then Ronald Quinlan was making noises on social media, almost pleased to Matchroom's Eddie Hearn to to kind of come along and rescue the whole bill and what have you. It's since come to light that that Quinlan's wife is expecting a child, which I believe is due kind of January 24, which kind of could be anything from now really until the start of February. However, we have since been told and assured that Quinlan has spoke to Richard Poxon of Poxon Sports, who's promoting the event, and has had an absolute nightmare with it all, I think, but that he will definitely be on the plane and he will definitely fight. We have also been told about the undercard, which I must confess, with all of this madness going on in the background, is actually better than I thought it was going to be. I'm not saying for one second before people have a pop and say that I'm saying it's worth being a pay-per-view. I'm not saying that for one second, but what I'm saying is that I was fearing the worst, and I think when you fear the worst, you can be surprised. And I think David Price versus Christian Hammer is a very good kind of crossroads heavyweight fight.
I do actually want to see that fight.
Yeah, and I think as a domestic fight, again, another crossroads fight, I suppose you could say it was, with Etches and John Ryder at middleweight. It's a decent fight. That could turn out to be a quality scrap.
Do we know which of them are going to be in the pay-per-view section? And
still not sure. Still not sure. And this is the kind of thing that there's a part of you that thinks, okay, well, this is their first foray into this. This is their first time doing it. They're not old. They're not whole old hands at doing it. Let's be a little bit forgiving. At the same time, with it being 3 weeks away, will it be 3 weeks this Saturday? You'd think that these are the kind of details that they really need to get sorted out. And it would not be a massive surprise if we were suddenly to be told that the whole thing had been canned.
Yeah, because even won't ticket sales be difficult when it's taken a while to get the information out there?
Well, I don't. I mean, I guess the only thing you can say with the ticket sales is, I know the tickets are on sale. How the sales are going, I don't know. Is that they've got a shift around 3,500 tickets to fill out the Olympia,
yeah.
Which, okay, it's a curious amount for a pay per view event.
Yeah.
But okay, let's just forget about pay per view for now. You'd imagine that there are some. There's probably, you'd imagine that the likes of Etches and Ryder will do a decent amount of tickets. So maybe it won't have such an impact on the actual live audience, those in attendance, as it will actually those that are trying to or thinking of watching from home. The interesting thing with pay-per-view is as well, I mean, it winds everybody up to the point that they almost lose their mind over it. I understand that. It's money that we've worked hard to earn, and then it's money that people are asking us to.
It's money that people should be spending on Boxing News magazine.
Do you know what?
Keep us alive for another week.
Well, yeah, exactly. But ultimately, how many times have you kind of been at home and you've said, and you've been adamant that you're not going to buy it? I wonder how many people actually will buy this pay per view when it comes to it. And also, this was the biggest thing on social media last week. Inadvertently, and not for the right reasons, I admit, but it goes back to that old saying, any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everyone is talking about this Chris Eubank pay-per-view event at the tail end of last week. When we went live with the story at the weekend, it did great numbers.
I think the biggest things on our website at the moment are probably Eubank stuff.
Like exactly. This. And look at the figures that we got on our Facebook Live platform for the interviews. That reached millions. And it did what, between them, almost 500,000 views with the two interviews, which is massive. Now, like it or not, there is interest there. There is massive interest there. And I've just got a sneaking suspicion, even though I think it is a dreadful excuse for a pay-per-view, I really do think that people will be surprised when they get the numbers back, because people will be sitting at home
drunk
out of their minds on a Saturday night, just got back from the local, and they just think, I wonder what is going on with Chris Eubank Jr. It happens. I'm not saying it's going to break records. I'm not saying it's going to do 8 million like I think Eubank Sr. has suggested it might, But it wouldn't surprise me if it did. It did better than people are expecting.
But then, I think, as we said before, the problem is then every fight with a decent name is there'll be a temptation to try and make it work on pay per view.
That is a very, very worrying trend if that starts. Yeah, Eddie Hearn made the comment, if I'd made this fight, I'd been absolutely crucified, and it's very, very true. If he'd have made that bill, he would be. But I think, in fairness, I don't think anybody's turning a blind eye to the Eubanks and the guys behind ITV with this whole thing. I don't think this has passed without criticism.
Yeah.
But yeah, I completely agree with you. This should not be a pay-per-view event at all. And yeah, like you say, if it is a success, then, you know, I suppose it changes the goalposts in a way that we don't want to see them changed.
No. Yeah. An interesting thing with, like, ITV screening some boxing on ITV4 and their new box office thing, we're waiting to see what BT Sport are going to be showing, but they're going to have a lot of cards coming up this year. But Sky are kind of getting their retaliation in, because Sky have been announcing show after show. So it's kind of interesting, you know, it sort of seems like competition is being stimulated.
Yeah, I agree with you, and, you know, I risk of repeating myself, I understand every single person's anger that's out there with this whole, with the way that pay-per-view seems to be getting more common. However, with that evil does come the increased exposure and the fact that boxing fans have got access to more live boxing than they have ever had in the history of boxing. There's just more events out there now to watch as a British fan than there ever has been.
So you're buzzing.
I'm not saying I'm buzzing. I mean, it comes with a downside, as most things do. But like you say, if you'd have said, go back 5 years and look at what was on live at that point, okay, now, and if you'd have said, okay, there's going to be the two biggest sports broadcasting companies in the UK will be showing boxing pretty much every week, you're going to have that. You're also going to have a terrestrial platform show very, very strong interest in getting involved as well. And Britain has got some of the biggest names in world boxing. You'd think, well, that sounds pretty good to me. I can live with that. We haven't got it that bad at the moment.
Never had it so good.
Okay. I think that's a...
I've been a boxing news for seven years.
Me too. Actually, it is this month, isn't it?
Yeah.
We should go out and have a...
My seven-year anniversary is the 15th. I'm assuming you're organising a massive party.
Well, I think if yours was the 15th, mine was the 22nd, because I came along a week after.
I don't like to remind you of my seniority, Matt.
Well... So I think we should throw. I've choose my words carefully, but we should maybe think about throwing a 7 year party.
Sweet.
It's been a good 7 years.
I'll unpack my party visor.
Okay. On that note, we'll leave it at that. Oh, hang on. No, we won't, because it's been fairly quiet in the boxing world recently. So what I want people to do, if you haven't for a while, just do me a favour and go out and get a copy of Boxing News. Okay? If you enjoy this podcast, you're going to love the magazine. These are some names that are in it this week. These are people that we have spoken to, and this is all exclusive stuff that you will not find anywhere else. Callum Smith, Liam Walsh, Frank Bullioni, Sam Eggington, David Price. There's also people like Milton McCrory. Who remembers Milton McCrory, the old WBC welterweight champion involved in that super fight with Donald Curry? Real talent. Many people compared him to Tommy Hearns back in the day. He's got some fantastic stories about that. Also from the same stable, but who came along a little bit after that, Michael Mora, former world heavyweight champion, first Southpaw heavyweight champion, and one of the craziest SOBs that I remember seeing in a boxing ring, particularly at light heavyweight. Glenn McCrory, we've got an exclusive interview with him where he goes into so much detail about his crazy old existence. And also, looking ahead, it's not all just about the past. One of the brightest prospects in British boxing at the moment, Robbie Davis Jr., his story is in there. There is lots of fun to be had in this week's boxing news. Go out, let us know what you think about the publication. I'd love to hear your views on it. And as always, thanks very, very much for your support.
Now I've given up Walter, he's not going to afford to buy it.